Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, folks around the world, we have been gone for 13 months. Let's get it out of the way. This is Hot Takes Only, technically episode 53, but we've been gone for 13 months, and it is good to finally be back. We have had a lot happen since then, so what you're about to hear is probably going to be broken up into three different mini episodes. We've got three different topics we want to cover. It's kind of going to go in chronological order. So first part of this is going to be basically this time a year ago, kind of fall 2022, talking some of the big storylines in the world of golf, moving into the college football playoff at the start of 2023. And then the Major League Baseball season, of course, with a lot of the rule changes and the playoff format, which Willie has some strong thoughts on. So we will get to that a little later in the show. But I want to thank you first and foremost for joining us tonight. It is November 7th, 2023. We're going back in time in a hot tub time machine, approximately 13 months. Willie, where are we starting in this episode of Hot Takes Only?
I think it's fair, Owen. Great to be back on, and we look forward to doing the best we can at the podcast and talking about interesting things that people enjoy. I think we have to start with golf. I think it makes sense. There's been so much that's going on. And if you remember, I think it's so interesting because around the time of our last episode, the PGA Tour was making significant changes to its format. And if you remember, actually, so August of 2022, which is not that far from when we did our last episode, the PGA Tour changed the format where they introduced these elevated events. I think an article in The Athletic where they had a nice timeline, they mentioned it was August 24th, to be exact, where Jay Monahan sent a memo announcing these new elevated events. And basically, the idea with the elevated events being limited field sizes and basically increasing the purse sizes to live with golf to, entice the star players to want to stay. And what I think is so interesting is that I think it's a great jumping off point, because I think one thing to me that's become pretty clear from the Live and Let Die book that Alan Shipnuck wrote, from lots of people on the inner circles, what's come to be clear is that was kind of the beginning of the end of PGA Tour and one of the most significant changes in the whole sports world. And this is one of the most significant changes in the sports world you'll ever see. And when the PGA Tour, about a year ago, increased the purses, what was pretty clear is that PGA Tour doesn't have the money. They were running low on money. They were asking tournaments and sponsors, they wanted sponsors to pay more prize money, and the sponsors were balking at it. They said, you know, it's not within our means to up the prize money for these tournaments. And the PGA Tour was using its reserves to, you know, bail out. And there's obviously a lot of pros and cons with this potential merger, but that led us to this merger with the tentative merger in May of this year, where there's this preliminary agreement where the PGA Tour and Live Golf will merge. And where we stand is who knows. They said that by the end of the year, they're supposed to have a deal, but there's rumors it won't get done. And honestly, I don't know, but all I can say is this is definitely one of the most dramatic. It's probably the most seismic change in sports we may ever have in our entire life. And I think it's fair to say to this point in our life, it is the most seismic change that we've had.
And I think it's really interesting that last year, I guess really the episodes came out this year, but the debut of Full Swing, the kind of behind the scenes documentary about the PGA Tour, about some of the main players on the PGA Tour. I think that, at this point, they're more professional golfers, because I think Ian Poulter is featured in it and he went over to Live. But I think the point is we're going to get a better look at this from the player's perspective. We got a little bit of that last year when the whole Live thing was announced. I think the last episode of season one, there was a clip of Rory McIlroy shouting at Phil Mickelson, like they were talking about Live on TV, and Rory said something to the effect of "Screw you, Phil." I won't repeat the language just to keep it PG, but you know, you can kind of assume where I'm going with this. But the idea, I think, for those who haven't been following Live and just don't really know golf as well, I think the main idea with something like Live is that it's trying to disrupt what has come to be known as the established order players bring in a lot of revenue for the game of golf. That all goes back to Tiger Woods single-handedly popularizing the entire sport by himself. And it becomes more of a revenue stream for a lot of different companies. It becomes much more of a, you know, it becomes mainstream more so than it is than it was in the past. It still is an elitist sport, and it kind of always will be, just based on the nature of the game and the history of it. But Tiger bringing it into the mainstream has led to players wanting to make more and more money. And obviously the argument is that, oh, these players, they make millions already at the top, sure, but for the average tour pro who's, you know, fighting to make cuts week in and week out, they want to be basically, they want to know that they won't have to claw at every single opportunity if they make it to the highest level. I mean, in sports, you have to stay at that highest level. That's kind of one of those things that's never going to go away. But you do have to, at some point, make guarantees for your family, for yourself, for your family. That's how you make a living. And so when a lot of guys jump ship from the PGA Tour to live, it was all in guaranteed money. Guaranteed money is not something that exists on the PGA Tour. If you play on the PGA Tour, you're not guaranteed anything. You have to play two rounds of very, very good golf against a field of 150 of the best players in the world who are also playing very, very good golf at a very high level. And it just becomes a very competitive environment where if you are not making cuts on a week in, week out basis, you will not survive. And so I think with LIV, it begs the question of what players value more. Do they value a livelihood, a kind of career, being able to provide for themselves and their families, or do they care about the prestige of being the best golfer in the world, winning the US Open, winning the Masters, winning the Open, winning the biggest tournaments on the biggest stages, being at the height of your sport? So back to your initial point of this whole this situation becoming PGA Tour trying to emulate LIV to an extent and trying to up the prize money so players have more of an incentive to stay, and also LIV presenting players with an opportunity, those two entities eventually merging. And then we're at the point now in November of 2023 where we still don't have an agreed upon framework for what that merger looks like. It throws into question, like you're saying, the competitive balance of the entire sport, because at this point, you have to assume that the only reason that these two entities are ever going to merge is for the financial gain of people who are involved. And who's involved? The best golfers in the world. And how do you get to that point? Well, do you earn it? And once you earn your spot there, do you stay? There's a lot of really complex issues at play. And it's just, there's no good way to go about deciding what's fair and what's not.
Yeah. And I think to follow up on that, really what this comes down to, I guess the question is, you know, people may wonder, and I think people see these stories in the headlines and they wonder, well, why should we care? You know, what's the big deal? And first of all, there is, we have to acknowledge a whole human rights side, which makes this a very, very tough issue for a lot of people to dissolve. But even on the pure golf side, the question of why should you care, right? I mean, there are, because, you know, people might say, oh, like there's plenty of, you know, soccer leagues, there's plenty of great basketball leagues around the world. Like all sports have great leagues around the world. You know, the PGA Tour has had all the best players. Like, why is this a big deal? And I think the reason is because of the implications in terms of what it does to the competition. Because if it exists how it does right now, the PGA Tour is significantly diluted. It's way worse than it's been. I mean, yes, the PGA Tour still retains a stronghold, but I think more players are going to go to LIV. And I think as it stands, it's taken a hit in terms of just the quality, to be frank. When you have major champions after major champion going to another tour, we haven't really seen a major sports league in our lifetime take maybe as big a hit as the PGA Tour could. And it's also the potential that if the PGA Tour doesn't merge, then LIV is going to compete with it. And to be honest, like, I wouldn't say it's a stretch to say the PGA Tour, the LIV could even surpass PGA Tour. If they don't merge and LIV's a competitor, I mean, I think that players are going to have no reason to stay loyal to the PGA Tour, and they're going to want to go. So really, this is just the demise of one of the biggest potential demise or restructuring of one of the biggest sporting competitions there is. It's like, I think that's why we should care. It's just a huge deal in the world of sports.
Well, and you and I had this conversation way back when LIV was kind of still in the earlier nascent stages. We talked about what this means for the world of golf, and you correctly kind of pointed out that this is going to significantly disrupt the game to the point where I don't know if maybe we expected this point where the point where the PGA Tour and LIV would eventually merge into one or under one umbrella. But you and I had this conversation, and I think we went back and forth on it. But the main consensus that you were coming to is that it was going to disrupt the game entirely. I did not see LIV as a threat at any point way back in the very beginning. I always thought of LIV as a far-fetched idea. They tried things like this before. Greg Norman has tried this specifically, and he's not even part of LIV anymore. He has tried things like this in the past, and they just never worked. And there was kind of chatter about turning what is basically what they call the silly season on the PGA Tour, so basically October through January, or I guess through December and ending in January, call it the silly season, have that be like what basically LIV is, where you have these no cut guaranteed events where there's like a team element to it. You have those few months to kind of experiment and play around with it. That never really happened. So when they announced LIV initially, I was kind of like, it's whatever. Phil's past his prime. It's whatever. Like, yeah, he won the PGA Championship at the age of what, 50, 51. But like, it's inconsequential long term for the health of the game. Like, everything's fine. Like, if Tiger doesn't go, it's fine. Then yada, yada, yada. And I had all these perceptions of what LIV really represented. I was wrong about that 100%. I'll admit it right now. I was thoroughly off on what it represents for the game of golf. And I think you're right. It's a huge change in, especially a sport like golf, where, like I was saying before, there's no guarantee that you are going to make money every time you tee it up on the PGA Tour. And I know there's a ton of these on all over social media. So if you just, a quick Google search will help you, but I can basically break down the outlays for what an average tournament looks like for a professional. I mean, between the airfare, the lodging, the tournament registration fee, the paying your caddy, food, all the expenses you would incur traveling from city to city on a weekly basis, it adds up to the point where some guys are spending upwards of $100K a week just to compete in their sport. And so the way they make that money, the way they cover that cost is one of two ways. Is A, the way we all kind of know, which is prize money, what you basically get what you win at the tournament. That's how you make your money. I shouldn't say or, because basically all the players at the top level have sponsors. You have sponsors. So manufacturers like Titleist and Callaway and the kind of legacy manufacturers, TaylorMade, etc., they will sponsor players. They'll help cover their fees. They'll help players get into certain events under sponsors exemptions if they have like medical problems that go back years and years. So the finances of golf are really, really, I think they get swept under the rug a lot because we all know of golf as this kind of rich man's game. But with something like LIV, where you're basically guaranteed to make money, that throws the competitive kind of the burning competitive fire out the window. I mean, obviously, yes, everyone at this level, every athlete at this level is a competitor. Everyone wants to win. But at the end of the day, if you're taking away that kind of necessity, like I need to win this to put food on the table, like you're changing the competitive, the way that that competition is kind of being seen. So to your point, it is a massive, massive change in the way we look at professional golf. And, you know, I've definitely tuned out a little bit over the last year or so, just because a lot of the top players have left. I mean, Cameron Smith won the Open in 2022 and then jumped to LIV, what, 2 months later? Brooks Koepka, multiple major champion, he's on LIV. Won as recently as, what, May of this year? Dustin Johnson, multiple major champion, same thing. And the list goes on and on. It's a mix of guys who have been way past their prime for years, like Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter, etc. Lee Westwood, who's surprisingly one of the most vocal people, most vocal pro-live people on social media. And then you have guys like Cameron Smith, who were literally in the prime of his career, just won a major, going to a league where, frankly, he doesn't have to try. And so I think the other component to this that I think maybe gets swept under the rug as well is the new kind of sports tech entertainment startup project put together by Tiger and Rory McIlroy. So that's basically their attempt at taking what LIV does, this kind of modified event, taking a team and then adding some like WWE component to it, where it's not obviously scripted, but they're trying to make it like a primetime spectacle. Like, it's all indoor. The game of golf is just changing so much, and it's changed dramatically in the last year and a half, and I don't think we'll be able to really do it justice as far as describing how much has changed until we get, you know, a few years removed from now, where we're able to see, you know, kind of what's in place. And maybe still by then we won't have an agreement between the Saudi PIF and PGA Tour.
Yeah, who knows? That's very well said, Owen. And I think you make a lot of interesting points. But when you talk about the finances of golf, you know, it's extremely interesting because, you know, at the end of the day, it put it simply, you know, like for the top players, the question is, does everyone have a price? And for the bottom players, you know, it's hard to make a living and you're grinding and you're trying to make cuts. You think of players you love like James Hahn, who's actually part of the new Alan Chipnuck book, and all these other players who are the journeymen and who may want to jump to LIV for a better living if invited, who didn't like the elevated events because if you're outside the top 50, then you're kind of getting left behind. And, you know, no matter how you slice it, it's crazy because on one hand, if things stay like it is, then right now, to put an analogy, I feel like the PGA Tour, maybe not quite as much, was like the Serie A in the 2000s. And that the Serie A, who once was the most powerful league in the world, had the best teams, and the Premier League got an influx of cash, overtook them. And now the Serie A is probably, in my opinion, even though I love it, the least popular league of the top four in the US. And to put it simply, if they don't get this merger done, which there's a chance they don't, I think the PGA Tour could die a slow death. I really do think so. Players have no reason to be loyal. You know, the money, the Saudis, the PIF has all the money in the world. And for anyone, that's a price. And even if they do merge, you know, there's still a significant talent dilution. And I don't think the PGA Tour will really ever be the same. And the other thing that I think just makes this so worth talking about, so it's not only the standing of the relative demise of the PGA Tour and how that's unlike most sports leagues like we've seen in our lifetime, but it's just the details. And, you know, like, there's so many crazy details. And that's what's crazy about the new book that came out, that everything, quote unquote, was happening in the shadows, as Alan Shipnuck had himself. And you had a guy like Phil Mickelson, to not to single him out, but kind of like, who was basically, Alan Shipnuck even said, like, negotiating with four sides at once. He was negotiating with Saudi Arabia. He was negotiating with the PGA Tour. He was trying to start his own league. And he was negotiating with the Premier Golf League, which was basically, for those that don't know, this new golf league that was trying to be started up by this lawyer named Andy Gardner, which was had private equity and was very similar to what LIV is ultimately now. And there's all these stories that have come out about his gambling debts. I mean, we're talking he's bet in the billions over the course of his life and lost hundreds of millions of dollars. And the, you know, Phil Mickelson wrote the operating agreement. Now, would this league have happened without Phil Mickelson? I think maybe, right? I mean, if you have that money, it would have. But there's no doubt that it would have been significantly harder and definitely would have happened significantly slower. And because Phil Mickelson helped write the operating agreement along with Yasser Al-Rumayyan and Greg Norman. And well, Greg Norman didn't help write it, but he was, you know, then
he was involved. Yeah.
Yeah, he was involved. And so this is also, I mean, like Phil Mickelson is one of the most interesting athletes of our lifetime, but it's just, there's always the story of, you know, what were the motivations of people going to LIV Golf? I mean, that's the crazy. For a lot of players, it might be money. You could say greed, but the whole Phil Mickelson question, only he knows. But, I mean, did he go because he just wanted a payday? I mean, did he go because he had gambling debt? Did he go because he disliked the PGA Tour? Because for years, he's been speaking against it and, you know, and kind of like Greg Norman, he wanted changes. I don't know, but all I got to say is that it's a story of tremendous greed. And I guess at the end of the day, money usually wins, unfortunately.
And it's interesting you say that because one of the guys that I appreciate from LIV, probably more than anyone, is Harold Varner III, because immediately when he joined LIV, he came out and said, yeah, I did it for the money. Straight up. If you're transparent about it, I can appreciate that more. I don't agree with what you're doing personally. I mean, I wouldn't just be able to ignore $1 billion if someone knocked on my door and was like, hey, here's $1 billion if you want to join us. Oh, by the way, here are all these human rights. You got to be transparent about it. And if there were more LIV players being transparent about the reason they decided to just jump ship from the PGA Tour, then I can appreciate that. I mean, in even in the Netflix documentary, Brooks Koepka was on camera quoted as saying, yeah, I didn't know if I could. I went through how many different wrist surgeries? I didn't know if I could compete with those guys after that. And so he took the money, and immediately after he agreed to sign with LIV, he called his mom and they were both crying, because that's securing, you know, that's securing generational wealth for not only him, his parents, but also his future generations. And it's something that if you are someone like Brooks Koepka, who didn't grow up with anything, that kind of money is so hard to ignore, because you're guaranteeing that you and your family will never have to go through that again. And that is a powerful thing. And money talks, man. That's really the takeaway from this segment. Money talks. As much as we don't like it,
money talks, and I think that's very well said. I mean, these are incredible sums, no matter who you are. But it also, what's crazy about it is that, and I will just say that, all this stuff was happening in the shadows, and you know, apparently, if you read the memos that, Jay Monahan refused to, the quote he said was, we're at war. Like, he refused to, like, they tried to, so when they're starting league, want to partner with them, and they didn't. And, you know, they're paying the price for it, because like you said, these are unreal sums of money. And, you know, I will say that it is very important, I do think, to point out that I do think that you're right. Guaranteed money in golf does kind of make it lose its competitive ethos. Not to say maybe they don't deserve it, but, you know, this is life-changing money, but rather than having to win via making cuts and getting prize money, players who are paid these tremendous sums of money up front, I mean, it changes everything.
Yeah, 100%. And I think we're getting to a point where the merger between the two, depending on how it looks, is probably it probably eliminates the need for us to care about tournaments other than the absolute biggest events. I mean, we're talking about the Honda Classics of the world. We're talking about the Valspar Championships, the tournaments that people don't really not know of, playing at Colonial every year, the one in Texas, the TPC Valero or wherever it is, the Houston Open, you know, tournaments that have long legacies as kind of staples on the PGA Tour. They're going to be irrelevant because no one's really going to care because people are going to win money regardless. It takes the drama out of it, really. And so as a sporting spectacle, the only thing you really care about is the major championships. And those are the only things that really stay intact because those are the four that aren't run by one specific governing body. They're kind of run by multiple. There's the Masters, which is its own thing and will always be its own thing. That's just the Masters. The Open and the U.S. Open and the PGA, which are all run by the relevant governing bodies, those are going to stay the same, you would assume. But it's hard to imagine a world. I mean, this is for me, too. This is someone who's been, I've been playing golf since I was five and really got into it again, if you will, when I was 16. So that was what I'm going to date myself 12 years ago. So for the last 12 years, I've been more invested in golf than I was previously. And I'm at a point now where, honestly, I don't really care about the tournaments that aren't majors and like the players. You know, it's sad to think that this is where we're at right now, but especially if the concept of guaranteed money gets thrown in there. I mean, every event is like a WGC event, but not all of the best players are playing and there's guaranteed money. And then what happens when we have like shotgun starts also, that's a weird thing to me because if you are leading a tournament on Saturday night, you deserve to go out last because you get to see how the course is playing. I mean, at the highest level, that is the one difference maker, I think, that LIV takes out of the equation. There's obviously, if you're not familiar with LIV, there's a lot of quirky things about the way those tournaments are played. There's a team element, which I don't really understand. There's obviously the individual component. Everyone goes out on the course at the same time. There's a finite roster of people. There's just so many weird things that they're trying to all implement into a very like siloed individual sport all at the same time. And it's just it's not entertaining. I've watched maybe 5 minutes of LIV golf in my entire life, and that's probably the most that I ever want to watch. But it was just the most like ridiculous thing ever. It's just like, oh, this putt's for $4 million. Well, yeah, what about the guy who finished dead last? He's still making a couple million, right? No, on the PGA Tour, that doesn't happen. On the PGA Tour, if you're dead last, you're packing your bags after day two. You're gone. So it the whole thing, and they only play 54 holes too, which to me is a little bonkers. But anyways, I could spend hours just
I will just say one more thing, which is, I think you said like the one point I think that's just worth making is that, to add on to what you're saying, like that is what's really sad. And the problem with golf is exactly right. That the one thing that the LIV golf has shown you is that players only care about the majors. That's all they care about. They care about teeing it up four times a year. And, you know, if all the other tournaments are irrelevant. And, you know, Tiger Woods won over 80 times in the PGA Tour. Phil Mickelson won over 50. Dustin Johnson won in the mid-20s. You know, I mean, these are guys that are great, great players. And, you know, it's sad because now you're having a sport turn into, I think, this LIV golf thing as a byproduct of it, it's turning into, it's a diluted product. And clearly the players only care about the majors, and it's going to significantly ruin the sport. I think it's the problem tennis has. The four majors are great. They have 12 Masters and 1,000 events, which are kind of like your players' championships, but no one cares, not to mention all the other regular tournaments. And that's one of the things I love about golf. It's kind of like baseball. There's weekly events. There's such great stories, but it's taking a hit. And then, I mean, not to mention, I mean, this is a whole nother road. I mean, who knows? But I mean, as it stands right now, I mean, with the new world ranking criteria and LIV Golf not getting world ranking points, you know, it's going to make it a very hard for most players to get in majors on LIV Golf. And, you know, you'll get Brooks Koepka and Cam Smith, but once your exemptions run out after 5 years, you know, you're not going to have DeChambeau. So, you know, it's the bottom line is that it just makes people not care about the sport. And that's what's really sad about this is like, it's going against growing the game. And that's hard.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the world golf rankings because I wanted to bring up kind of the poster child for LIV not getting world ranking points anymore or not qualifying for any world ranking points. For those who aren't familiar, of course, every golfer professionally has a rank in the world, like with tennis, like with is there another sport that does it? I think like tennis is the other equivalent. But the world golf ranking basically determines where you get to play as far as the big tournaments are concerned. So basically top 50 and in will guarantee you a spot in the Masters, the US Open, the Open, and the PGA. So being in the top 50 in the world is really, really important. If you are a LIV player and you are not a past major champion, you're not otherwise exempt into an event and you can't gain world ranking points, you become basically you're going upstream without a paddle. Taylor Gooch is the kind of poster child for this in my eyes because he gets thrown around a lot as a guy who's been a very vocal about LIV deserving world ranking points because of the strength of the field and how many major champions are playing and the quality of golf they're playing is the same as on the PGA Tour. It's somewhat-ish. But Taylor Gooch, as of now, as of today, is ranked 238th in the world. Taylor Gooch plays on LIV. There is no way Taylor Gooch is going to be able to earn world golf ranking points unless he plays in some small tour in Europe, some small tour in Asia, or any other sanctioned, officially sanctioned tour. And that's not something that LIV players necessarily want to do because I'm pretty sure they have, like with the PGA Tour, they have minimums on how many events they have to play. And I know one of the talking points for LIV was that, oh, you get to make more money that's guaranteed without playing as many events and spend more time with your family. Well, if you're not getting world ranking points like Taylor Gooch, you have to go out and play events during less than ideal times for you to spend time with your family. So it becomes like a, why did you jump ship? Oh, it was because of the money, right? So just tell us it was because of the money. It goes back to that same point. But if you can't get world golf ranking points, I got news for you. You're not going to play in the biggest tournaments, and so you're going to fade into irrelevance until the day comes where LIV players, exclusively LIV players, are going to get world golf ranking points. Last point I want to make on this, Willie, I'll hand it back to you because I know I've been rambling on this, but I know there's been a lot of chatter on the PGA Tour about some of the current players like Rory and Tiger and, it's, you know, the Scottie Scheffler, Spieth, JT, et cetera, about whether or not they would welcome LIV players back to the PGA Tour, even if they're under the same competitive umbrella. And I think it's just one of those things where it's really hard to mend some of the kind of verbal bridges when you talk about guys not wanting to play, you know, 15, 20 tournaments a year, turning around having to play 15, 20 tournaments a year with the people that they said they didn't want to play that many tournaments with, not specifically because of them, but you know what I mean. It's just a wild state of how, like, where things have gotten to at this point. And I don't know that the product outside of the majors is going to be any more compelling than it is right now. And I don't think there's a way we go back to that unless basically LIV fades into oblivion, which I don't think it will.
Yeah, no, that's the problem. I don't think it's going to fade into oblivion. Yes, Cheryl Ramine, I think, is the most powerful person in golf. And I totally agree with you on, I mean, you know, I think it'll be much easier. I think, first of all, there are 11 players, I believe, at the beginning that joined, most notably Phil Mickelson, Bryson DeChambeau, that joined the LIV lawsuit against the PGA Tour. So I think those guys are the ones that are going to be hardest to come back. I think the players like the Dustin Johnsons of the world who maintain great relationships with the players, they won't have as hard a time. But I agree with you. I don't see them coming back. And I don't see it, you know, some of the players have been, you know, most notably Rory McIlroy, have been very outspoken. And yeah, I mean, think about this for a second, though. Oh, and I just want to say, like, Bryson DeChambeau was the most interesting player in golf, in my opinion. Like, he revolutionized the whole distance thing. And look what happened to him. Look what happened to him.
I could honestly spend an entire episode ranting about Bryson and about the distance myth in golf. But I won't. I boy, oh boy, would I spend hours talking about this. But I'll save it for another episode, because I think there's other stuff we want to get to. And namely, I think the college football playoff, speaking of another sport where the idea of this pageantry is going to be kind of thrown out the door, especially starting next year. But we do have to go back in time and talk about last year. So we're going to do that in a second. Any final thoughts on kind of this golf world, this seismic change in the golf world? Because to me, I think it's, I mean, and I think the one thing that I want to really impress upon everyone listening is that the only reason that the PGA Tour is kind of, in my eyes, going to fade into kind of irrelevance outside of the major tournaments, outside the world of golf is going to be kind of less than compelling outside of the biggest events, is frankly because Tiger Woods is going to be 48 years old in December, and Tiger Woods is basically done. I mean, that is a sobering reality for those of us who got to watch prime Tiger. And I missed like prime Tiger. I was 5 in 2000 when he had that just like all time heater, where I don't think anyone in any sport has single-handedly dominated quite like him. Because I mean, individually, like, you could talk about like LeBron being a dominant force in basketball, or like Michael, like MJ in basketball, or like Gretzky in hockey, or like, you know, but you start talking about like Tom Brady, well, it wasn't like every single season. You talk about like, you talk about even Ohtani, like, yeah, he's great, but like, he doesn't pitch and hit every single day. Like, Tiger in his prime in 2000 literally won, I think, 50% of his events. I think most players in their life on the PGA Tour win less than 1% of their events. Tiger's career win percentage at one point fairly recently was in the high 20s, low 30s, which is absurd. And in 2000, I think it was like 50%, if not higher. Like, he won more than half of the events that he played, which to win more than once in a calendar year on the PGA Tour these days will almost invariably put you in the player of the year conversations. But if you win, we're talking like seven or eight times in a year, then we're talking like all-time heater. I just don't think there's any, like, you could talk about maybe the Bobby Jones era. My dad always goes back to that, like winning 4 majors in a calendar year. But like June to April, June of 2000 to April of 2001 was the peak, I think, of golf. And I don't think we're going to get to that, where one guy by himself takes this sport that is kind of on the periphery and puts it in the mainstream because he's just so damn good at it. But yeah, he's getting up there in age. He's not going to be part of it. And I think that's part of why golf is going to fade into back into the periphery.
Yeah. My closing thought is that I completely agree. And the sport is not in a position to succeed after the popularity of Tiger Woods. Players have said that themselves, that even Rory McIlroy said they're struggling to compete without Tiger. And just, I'll wrap this up by saying, like, look at the legacies of Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. I mean, Tiger Woods, won 81 times, could win another, you never know. We'll see.
Probably not. Yeah, you'd be hard pressed to convince me that Tiger's going to win again.
He gets in this car accident, where thank God he lives, but you know, it was really bad. He goes to, you know, he forms the famous Delaware meeting where they go and they meet in this room and like they agree to form the elevated events. And he's the one, he's now going to be on the player policy board. Like he's going to be one of the most figures. He's the one spearheading the PGA Tour. On the other hand, you have Phil Mickelson, who, you know, has come out with major gambling debt. There's this quote about Saudi Arabia, which we don't need to say on air. In a really, there's some stories people have told about him for the good and the bad. And his legacy has been tarnished. And I don't know if that's not the most interesting rivalry in all of sports. Like, I don't know what it is, honestly. But
I mean, I think there's been a lot. I mean, you could chronicle the Phil Tiger back and forth, and you could go as far back as like 99 or even further than that, when I think Phil, being a little older than Tiger, was at Arizona State, also in the, what, this is actually a good segue into college football, but what is what was the Pac-10 and what is going to be what the remnants of the Pac-12 at Arizona State, and how he had a really storied college career. And then in comes Tiger, who wins like every event he plays in college. That's obviously an exaggeration, but he won a lot in college. And then you have Phil on the PGA Tour, Tiger on the PGA Tour, Phil winning a lot, Tiger winning a lot, Phil not quite breaking through in a major, Phil throwing shade at Tiger for playing outdated equipment before the kind of metal heads in drivers and woods became a thing. And it they've just gone back and forth and back and forth. And you know, they don't, you know, they're not best buds, we'll put it that way. But I think there's just a fascinating dynamic between the two of them, and it's never really going to be, it's always going to be like, in my eyes, Tiger being head and shoulders above Phil, and Phil trying to claw his way back into relevance. Like, if you mention golf, Willie, let's be honest, who's the first name you're gonna say? First name's always gonna be Tiger. It's never gonna be Phil then Tiger. It's always Tiger. So that to me is kind of the biggest thing with this, and the fact that despite having all the money that he's made over his career through endorsements, through earnings, through smart business deals, through everything he's done, he is still going to bat for the PGA Tour. He's not going to bat for making more money. Like, he's going to bat for the institution of the PGA Tour that has afforded him the ability to be the figure he is now. And it's just always going to be different when you compare the two. Now, obviously, the concept of diving into who they are as people, it takes more than a podcast, one episode of a podcast. But, you know, I think it's just a very, very fascinating comparison, and one that will always be Tiger 1, Phil 2.
Yeah, I agree with that.